We called this a beautiful idea why we need anarchist communism now. Obviously, we hope that it's not just going to remain an idea. We could have used the term libertarian communism as well. Sometimes there have been groups in the past that have called themselves libertarian communist, and groups that we're in contact with in the rest of Europe who use the term libertarian communism. But we've using the term anarchist communism for the purpose, well, our group is called that, and for the purpose of this talk. So, what's the problem? Why do we need it? Well, I probably don't need to go into too much detail here because all of us are probably well aware. One of the problems, of course, is the state, and all over the world, even if some of them hide behind the veneer of democracy, governments are repressive to various extremes. We have to deal with that. The other issue, of course, is at work. Capitalism is based on a system of exploitation. And in most, practically all jobs, people often feel alienated and they're exploited for the purposes of making profits for the capitalists. We have, obviously, capitalism has a ruling class, and it's a question of economic inequality, as well as power inequalities and domination. We have some statistics here about land ownership in England, and you can see that half of England is owned by less than 1% of its people. Scotland's even worse. So we have a system of complete inequality where a few people own everything, whether it be industry, whether it be banks, etc., whether it be land, and therefore have power over us. War and conflict, which we're certainly experiencing now with the situation in Palestine, and the fact that the British government and British industry is one of the main suppliers of weapons to many of these countries. They don't really care who, they support Israel. And then we have the problem of nationalism and religious bigotry. Here is just one example, with Serbs clashing with Albanians at a football match. And of course, Yugoslavia underwent intense problems with nationalism conflict, often divided or defined by religious identity. And this is going on all over the world, where we have nationalism interfering with any efforts to build a mass working class movement. We've also got all the various forms of oppression, racism and sexism still going on, and which is making many people's lives miserable when they're at the receiving end of that. And then we have environmental destruction, whether it be loss of biodiversity through the cutting down of rainforests and the loss of various species, or, and linked to that, of course, global warming. So these are all problems that we face. In fact, it's a pretty bleak picture, really, especially because now, because of the way the mass media works, we are aware, so aware of the problems all over the world instantaneously. So it's not just the problems in our own country or in our own town world. We're aware of everything going on elsewhere, and it could certainly lead to despair. But we believe that there is hope. So we're going to look a little bit about what anarchist communism is, but I'm going to start with a bit on what it's not. And many people we get a bit tired of it, but in fact, it's not a stupid question. Many people come up to us and they say, "How can you be an anarchist and a communist?" Some of us often lose patience with that question, but it's not necessarily a stupid question, because really, you can't have anarchism without the communism. And you can't have communism without the anarchism. One reason is, if you look purely at sort of anarchism, often it's synonymous with just being anti-authority or being rebellious of some kind. But of course, it depends what you're being anti-authority for. So here we have the lockdown protests that many anarchists actually got involved in. And on the other sub picture here, we actually have Trump supporters fighting the police. So fighting the police on its own isn't necessarily anarchist, nor resisting the government or some measures or whatever is not necessarily anarchism either. It all depends what for And not that we want things to be top down. It's up to us to make decisions about how things are done. But there's no point in being anti-authority for its own sake and for the wrong aims. But for many people, we get the impression that the idea is if you're rebellious and you don't like authority, then that's enough. Another problem, anarchism, is individualism and lifestyleism, what we call that. And many people, they become anarchists and they adopt a certain lifestyle and a certain way of dressing, etc., etc. Again, as part of being, oh, aren't I rebellious? I'm part of an alternative subculture. But this, though quite interesting, is not going to bring about a revolution. And also, by staying within your anarchist ghetto, it's going to be harder to relate to the wider working class. Nick, did you want to say anything about Stirner and or insurrectionism at this point?
Well, no, I'd just like to say something about lifestyleism. I think it's perfectly okay to do certain things within your life, to change it as much as possible, but not to make it into an ism, when that's all it is. And you don't actually agitate within the world. A certain current developed within anarchism, if you look at it in a historical way. I think it was as a result of various defeats that the anarchist movement had. So people turned in on themselves and they turned away from agitation, a social agitation, and they used thinkers like Nietzsche and Stirner to justify that. And they saw the mass of the working class as being sheep-like. And so they wanted to develop them, they developed themselves as individuals. Rather than think about creating a revolutionary movement.
Something else that I wouldn't say is on the same scale as lifestyleism or just being anti-authority is anarcho-syndicalism. Because anarcho-syndicalists believe that the goal is anarchist communism. So, in many respects, they are anarchist communism. In the ACG, we feel that only working to create the anarcho-syndicalist union is limited in what in its scope. It's very useful as a tool, and if you had effective anarcho-syndicalist unions in this country, then I think people would certainly be joining them. But you need to transform all aspects of society, and to only focus on the workplace is limited. So that's why we would say that we're not anarcho-syndicalists, even though anarcho-syndicalists themselves would say that their goal is anarchist communism, but we feel that their strategy is not that effective. Nick, did you want to add a little bit to that?
The thing with anarcho-syndicalism is, I mean, this is quite a generalization because you've got to remember groups like the CNT, which was a mass anarcho-syndicalist union, did actually involve itself in agitation in neighborhoods, all of, around rent, around things like that. But in general, it does exclude a lot of people who aren't working in workshops or factories. It excludes domestic household workers. It excludes a lot of youth, the elderly, etc., etc. The original concept of anarchism, anarchist communism, was that rather than everything is run by anarcho-syndicalist unions, that it will be run by that things will be administered via communes. That's why one of the reasons why we called ourselves our current call itself anarchist communist. People like Kropotkin and Malatesta talked about the idea of a federation of communes. Well, and before that, so did Bakunin. Obviously, if I was in Spain, I'd probably be in one of the anarcho-syndicalist organizations. In this country, it's a different matter, Solidarity Federation, but it's a tiny group. It calls itself a union, but it's very, very small. And other groups like the Industrial Workers of the World, I mean, a couple of 2,000, 3,000, they do some useful work. But overall, I think we have to look towards as we say, we have to look towards agitation in all spheres of life, you know, around the environment, around things like rent, around anti-nuclear activity, anti-war activity, all of those sorts of things.
Well, on the other hand, we believe that you can't have the communism without the anarchism. This is a quote from Malatesta, and he says, "We too aspire to communism as the most perfect achievement of human solidarity, but it must be anarchist communism that is freely desired and accepted, and the means by which the freedom of everyone is guaranteed and can expand. For these reasons, we maintain that state communism, which is authoritarian and imposes the most hateful tyranny that has ever, the most hateful tyranny that has ever." Can anyone else see it to finish my reading here?
Afflicted, tormented, and handicapped mankind, Malatesta.
Malatesta. What's wrong with communism without the anarchism?
What's wrong with Leninism? I think we'd say, you know, what Leninist communism, but by that I mean both varieties, Stalinist and Trotskyist. It's the idea of a worker state that you can actually capture the state and use it to transform society, whereas we argue, and anarchists have always argued that if you capture the state, then you become prisoners of that state, and you, as history has shown in Russia, a new ruling class is created. Tied up the idea of a worker state is the dictatorship of the proletariat. The idea originally meant that that the mass of the population, the proletariat, those who nothing to sell but their labor power, will take over. But the trouble with that is that you don't have a if you like, you know, the mass of the working class directing society. You end up with a party directing society, and within that party, a leadership group. So it ends up, you know, it started off with Lenin and Trotsky. You know, people think, some people argue, oh, everything was okay until Stalin came along. That's not true, because you know, there's a lot of evidence that both Lenin and Trotsky use extremely authoritarian methods. They closed down other left groups, including anarchists and socialist revolutionaries, all of those groups. And when there was an uprising at the Kronstadt naval base, it was, you know, against the drift towards this authoritarian state, it was brutally crushed. Another thing is that the idea of a vanguard party. Now, you know, it's meant to be the group of conscious revolutionaries. And there's nothing wrong with having an organization with conscious revolutionaries in it. But it's as if you see yourself as distinct from the rest of the working class. And if you think, as Lenin argued, that the working class can only have trade union consciousness, it can't develop itself beyond that into taking revolutionary positions, and a vanguard party is needed, then you know, you get this idea of superiority, which is what happened with the Bolshevik Party in Russia. And you know, I've already tackled the problems of authoritarianism. You know, you got the authoritarian trend under Lenin and Trotsky. It developed into the most, as Malatesta said as well, you know, it's a horrific dictatorship, with masses of people ending up in prison camps, and a very strictly controlled society, very strictly controlled by the state and its apparatus, secret police, all of that. And as you see from the points there, I talked about the vanguard puts the party over the interests of the class. I mean, you can see it in the manipulation of various Trotskyist groups in this country. You know, they go into very worthwhile campaigns, take them over. Not in all, you know, they don't want to further that campaign or the interests of the class as a whole. They want to manipulate it so they can actually recruit. I mean, very bad examples of that is the Socialist Workers' Party. I mean, I've been involved in so many campaigns where they discover that, it's getting traction, and they come in en masse, just in order to recruit, not in order to further the aims of the campaign. Another thing is with both Trotskyism and Stalinism, they have a very close relationship to social democracy. I mean, they argue that they're opposed to social democracy. By that, I mean, the social democratic groups that all around the world, and laborism groups like the Labour Party. In the final analysis, when an election time comes, they all say, "Well, vote Labour," without any illusions that their previous criticisms of Labourism are pushed aside, and they talk about putting demands on the Labour Party, to implement various social measures, and they don't actually go on to actually talk about revolution. That they are actually intricately aligned with social democracy. I mean, many of them, are actually work inside the Labour Party, like some members of the Communist Party and various Trotskyist groups. Although nowadays it's much more difficult to be what we'd call an entrenched Trotskyist with inside the Labour Party. Anyone who's seen as being on the left is being pushed out of it. And finally, I already referred to that. We had the example of the Russian Revolution. I think I've dealt with that in detail. The crushing of other left groups, the crushing of a free press, freedom of assembly, all of those things, the shooting of revolutionaries.
What would we want? What would be different? What would an anarchist communist future look like? This is, I believe, Malatesta again. The revolution is the creation of new living institutions, new groupings, new social relationships. It is the destruction of privileges and monopolies. It is the new spirit of justice, of brotherhood, of freedom, which must renew the whole of social life. Raise the moral level and the material conditions of the masses by calling on them to provide through their direct and conscientious action for their own future. And I think it's that last phrase which is quite important, because it's actually saying that the working class needs to take direct responsibility and control of what that future is going to be. And also, according to Berkman, what anarchy is not bombs, disorder, or chaos. Again, these are common stereotypes. It is not robbery. It is not a war of each against all. It is not a return to barbarianism. It's the very opposite of that. And Malatesta himself said that anarchism is organization, organization, and more organization. So, what are the main characteristics? Well, the end of class society, of course, expropriation of the means of production, both industrial and agricultural, as well as distribution. All of this will then be organized collectively. Expropriation of all land and community assets, such as housing, to ensure that
Managed
they are
collectively.
managed collectively. So, new forms of culture, and I think this is quite important, is people often talk about culture if it's something sort of sacred, but the whole idea of anarchist communism is that we're going to be creating new cultures that aren't based on individualism and competition, but encouraging community and creativity. And also vital is the transformation of personal relationships. So all personal relationships be equal, the principles of solidarity and respect. Also, with the destruction of the state, we need to have new forms of decision making. And that's where the idea of the commune is important. And it has to involve the mass of the people working together and taking responsibility. So, this is very different from what we've just seen with Leninism. So, will it happen? Well, Kropotkin said there are periods in the life of human society when revolution becomes an imperative necessity. When it proclaims itself as inevitable, new ideas germinate everywhere, seeking to force their way into the light, to find an application in life. And this is what I think gives us hope, is the fact that throughout history, there have been periods when things have changed incredibly rapidly. When things sort of coalesce and crystallize, things have gone on for years, they come together. So this is what we hope will happen. And this is one of our tasks, of course, is to create a situation where revolution does become an imperative necessity. So if we say that we need an anarchist communist revolution, unfortunately, very few would agree. Often when we're standing on street corners handing out Jackdaw and everything, and we then look and we see all the religious people who are also handing out their propaganda, and the fact that all the religious people seem to have a lot more interest than we do, where thousands, if not millions, have gravitated to various religious groups, whereas anarchist communism obviously is still a very much minority viewpoint. Having said that, however, we feel that we might not call it anarchist communism, but people still have the aspirations to what we call anarchist communism, even if they might not use those terms. It's still, we feel, deep-seated within the working class. So it's not something that's alien. It's just that people have not yet developed this sort of consciousness that an anarchist communist revolution is necessary. So why? Well, there's another number of reasons. First, three of them here, not desirable, not necessary, and not possible. And I'm going to look at each in turn. Obviously, for many people, it's not desirable because obviously they're doing pretty well in the current system. So they have absolutely no interest whatsoever in any revolution. So we can leave those out of the equation. They are the enemy. The other problem is that people have illusions that it's not necessary because you don't have to have a revolution. You don't have to have a revolution. Create a completely new society because it can be done within the system. So many people focus on getting the right people elected. I mean, even now we see people, forming different, coalitions and groups, hoping in their local authority to get more progressive candidates selected or elected to local councils. And, Corbynism was a case in point. There's how many thousands of people left movements and campaigns in order to throw in their lot with supporting Corbyn. Even tinkering with the system, okay, even if you manage to abolish the monarchy or made some improvements to democracy, you're still only tinkering with the system. In the US and in France, they don't have a monarchy, but we wouldn't say that it's any more progressive than what we have here. Because really, the problem is the whole system itself, its structures, its institutions, it links with the ruling class. You can't just tinker with it or get the right people in power. Nick, did you want to add anything to the any examples or anything to the problem of reformism and the Labour Party?
Think the way that capitalism has developed, it's becoming more and more difficult for labor type reformist organizations to actually reform. The whole logic of capitalism is towards more and more austerity, and a lot of these groups end up administering that austerity. Like in they have in the past in France, in this country, or all around the world. That's one of the reasons, well, it's impossible to really think about reforming the system anymore.
But the other illusion, I think, is that people often talk, and many of the campaigns I'm involved in, they talk about systemic change. And when you probe a bit, you realize that they don't really mean getting rid of capitalism. So they say systemic change, sort of changes really within capitalism. And they believe that you don't really need to get rid of capitalism, which of course would require a revolution. You can't just get rid of capitalism again through the ballot box or any of the reformist ways. So many people think that, oh, you can make capitalism more socially responsible. So that, through some kind of regulation, usually voluntary, and that the capitalists will agree to pay more wages or treat their workers better or whatever. The problem is for capitalism, it needs continual growth, and exploitation is also fundamental to capitalism. Often what you win in terms of higher wages or better working conditions, they'll soon work to take them back in another in an, th through the back door. They give with one hand and then they take away with another hand. Their whole purpose is to exploit, is to make profits, and to continually grow. So a mass movement, you might win reforms, which are important, but is continuous struggle, and these reforms are largely inadequate. I mean, the environmental issue is really a case in point, because capitalism does not want to really, they want to keep growing. So therefore, they are concerned that our energy levels, the amount of energy we consume, continues to grow. So therefore, they're making huge profits by looking at alternative energy sources. They don't want to look at cutting back. They don't want to look at reducing the use of energy. They don't want to look at even things like insulating houses better. Saving energy isn't going to make them any money. The only thing that's going to make them money is things like having electric cars or wind farms or whatever. All these things are ways that capitalists can continue to make a profit, but really will have almost no impact on the environment. But that's what capitalism is. It won't be reformed. There can't be a just transition. People talk about just transition. The other problem is that many people have illusions in the system. Many people believe that no matter what background you come from, you too can be rich and make money, and therefore they want to support a system that might give them the opportunity of becoming rich. Or people are completely dominated by their interest in their social media accounts or their mobile phones or whatever, that they're really not looking anywhere outside their own, even their own screens. I mean, they're probably, everything is mediated through the internet. And we've seen that often when you look to see, well, who's going to come to something like a demo or something where you actually have to go out and do something, and find that people almost seem to think that ticking like on a Facebook page or Instagram account is actually doing something. They're almost living in an alternative universe, and seem completely unaware of all of what's going on around them. And this is a danger. It makes it very difficult to organize for revolution if people are too obsessed by their own internal worlds. Other people say that, oh, you can't have a revolution because it's not human nature. And we've shown again and again that show mutual aid and solidarity. It is actually part of human nature. So we had in the Spanish Revolution, for example, that people organized and created alternative structures and institutions. And the picture on the right here is people organizing after Grenfell fire. So people just came together almost spontaneously to do something. And the same happened during COVID. Many people joined, organized mutual aid groups and things like that. So really, human nature is not an obstacle. Human nature does actually support the basic tenets of anarchist communism. And other people might say, well, the forces against us are too strong. And here we have, for example, on the left here is the Berlin Wall coming down. And I remember people thinking that this was never going to change. It was just going to go on forever and ever. And then all of a sudden it did. A whole series of events would have happened to lead up to that, but things did change. On the right, we have what was called the Arab Spring. And again, it was people coming together and showing their power. So the forces against us are very strong, but there's been example after example where if people do come together, that they can actually win. And we do have that power. An anarchist future, we believe anarchist communist future, is desirable, necessary, and possible. So it might not be desirable for a small minority, but for the vast majority, for the working class, it is. So how do we make it happen? So we've already looked at some of the obstacles. People don't believe a revolution is possible, but then it's not possible because you don't believe it's possible. So part of our jobs as anarchist communists is to make people realize that by showing so many different examples of what people have done, that a revolution is possible. So what kind of things can we do to help things along? Because it's not a question of just sitting around and waiting, and all of a sudden the working class will rise up and anarchist communism become the new system. It's got to be created. It's got a revolutionary movement has to be built. So we have to have confidence in our ability to run things. So the more that we do, the more things that we're involved in, and we can see that, yes, we can do it, like organizing mutual aid groups, like organizing at work. It shows that, yes, we can do things. We have the ability to run things. And the revolutionaries have an important role to play. It's not just a question of spontaneity, but revolutionaries who are working in the workplace or the community or in campaigns have a key role to play. Organization is critical. That we need to have structures and developing alternative institutions and structures that have the potential for taking over in an anarchist communist society. We talk about social insertion, which is a term that we got from our Latin American comrades, which is basically long-time work in the wider working class. That's not just a question of being outside, that we're pure, we have all the knowledge. But actually, you're in there in the struggles, wherever they may be in the workplace or in the community. And part of that will, of course, be resisting attacks, of which there are many, and creating alternatives and building up an effective movement. So revolutionaries need to be directly involved in these things. And the greater the preparation, the more people involved, then the greater chance of success. And Malatesta actually said the less violence you'd actually need, because we do really need to have the mass of the working class involved. So look at some of the struggles today to see, what you can be involved in. The one on the left is, of course, the school students who made a big impact when loads of them came out on strike a few years back. On the right, we have, one of the many workplace struggles going on. This is the United Voices of the World, which is a what we call an alternative or base union, who have managed to win loads of different struggles in London. Have another one here in South Africa, a community campaign that they struggled against a mining company who wanted to take over their land for mining, and they organized and they won by the community coming together. And of course, recently we have the situation in Gaza, which of course has not been won. But the kind of things that are going on, which are really good, are the fact that people are taking protests to factories. This one I think is in Brighton. So there's an arms factory in Brighton where people are holding regular protests because they actually do supply
Lovely.
something to Israel. Nick, did you want to add anything more to any of the points that I made in this last part?
I'll just say, if we don't move towards anarchist communism, as it says on the slides, the alternative is barbarism, an increasingly authoritarian world, big drive towards another world war. And we're seeing that regularly now. Things are getting more and more bellicose in the media. And they're talking about bringing back conscription. And about how one American commentator said, "Oh, we're going to vaporize 45 million Russians." And unspeakable things like that. So that is what it says. It's either anarchist communism and barbarism, or and probably worse than that, annihilation. A, because of the drive to war, and B, because of of sort of juggernaut hurtling towards environmental destruction.
Thanks, Bonnie and Nick, for that. So we're sort of now at the presentation. It's kind of open to the floor for comments, questions, views, what you're doing in your community to sort of organizing, if you are already organizing on anarchist communist lines, really back into what people want to discuss about. It's a bit of free form this. It's up to what people would like to talk about. Go on, Chris. Yep.
So,
Thank you, kick us off.
generally, the majority of people that I spend my time with are people that are very susceptible to anarcho-communist ideas. But I think, firstly, the term puts people off, communism especially, anarchism to an extent, and it's very hard to engage people on those terms. And secondly, it's hard to succinctly explain to people. Explaining a whole economic and social system is very difficult, but when you're already starting from a negative position. So I was just wondering if anyone has advice for how you approach this with people who are sympathetic towards the ideas, but I think struggle to get past the kind of systemic change that would be required.
Anyone sort of want to take up Chris's point there? How do people sort of bring up these ideas to other people?
Well, I'll try to
Ron Donald.
outline. I think what I was trying to say is that there's a group in London called Rebel City that we work with other anarchists, and we go into schools and we give talks in schools to the sixth formers who are actually studying anarchism and as part of their A level in politics. So, of course, they have loads of questions. And the questions, what do you do with rapists? What do you do about this? And what do you do about that in the future society? And I think we found ways of explaining how anarchist communism could work to them that it actually made sense. But also, I think you have to relate it to their own experience. So if people look around them, that's why I think it's so important to show examples of when people have shown solidarity or mutual aid with others. You know, if you can see that in your own lives, if you can see that people want to do that, that is the default position, is to actually help others and to support others. Then I think they'll say, well, yes, this could possibly work because I can see it's working. But also they have to think about, well, they have to look at their own lives. Are their own lives working? And in the most part, probably not. You know, they're gonna have problems with economic problems, but also just general social life is very alienating. And you know, to say that, you know, are you happy with the situation as it is, or are you happy with the fact that, you know, the environment is in such a state that we may no longer have a planet? So it's just people have to begin to care, they have to care, they have to see the possibilities. And then, okay, they might not relate to anarchist communism, but the point is they'll relate to the general spirit of it. I think that's it. You have to accept. And that's why, you know, when you're involved in a campaign or some kind of struggle, it's the spirit of it that you're talking about. You know, so I'm involved in a lot of different things, but I don't go into anarchist communism all the time, you know, at all, probably. But, you know, everything that I say, I would say it would be an anarchist communist position. So it's just that, yes, it might be alienating, but I think for there's no, it's, it is what it is. And it's still an ideology with a history that offers us hope. And that is why we still stick to using the term anarchist communism.
I guess I was a little bit put off by the term anarchist communism, if I have to say, but I decided to come along anyway. But it's just that my experience of anarchist organizing hasn't involved all of these types of terms, anarchist communism. I tended to talk by a group that would define themselves as libertarian socialists, if that makes sense, on Vespertissimo. Is that the way you say it? Yeah. And it was an eco gathering a month ago, and it really inspired me, because I'd kind of written off anarchy, to be fair, as a viable strategy. I've just kind of returned to activism after a long time. Yeah, I don't know. They were talking about the need for organisation. The reason why I came was to try to find out where are the anarchists that are organised? How do I link in? Because I just, don't know how to find where everybody is and where the organisation is happening. But I guess what I wanted to say was, terms put people off, don't they? But in essence, we are talking about the same thing to a lesser role.
Thanks, Charlie. I'll just say that the especificismo and the social insertion that Bonnie was talking about are really very much the same thing, just sort of different terms, the same type of thing. But that's what kind of Bonnie was talking about with the social insertion.
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is outside of periods of, mass activity by working class people and class struggle, whether that's community or workplace, I think, our ideas can seem a little bit strange. Revolutionary ideas do seem strange to most people because they're counter to everything they've been told since they were small. I think our ideas tend to make more sense, particularly if we're like sharp in our critique of what's creating problems for people and what's not helping. So for example, institutionalized struggle, as it were, through the trade union bureaucracies and things like that, through political parties that are committed to the continuation of capitalism, et cetera, et cetera. So it can make a lot of sense then. It doesn't mean that people will, immediately say, oh yes, I'll join the anarchist communists, but they kind of think, well, yeah, they're actually quite serious people. They're talking quite a lot of sense here. And I'm going to, think about that because it has an immediate sort of relation to what I'm experiencing in my day-to-day life in struggles. But outside of struggles, I think one thing that revolutionaries should do, and probably we don't do enough, is be very, very, very open and available and contactable out there in the street, basically. We don't have access to the kind of outlets that the capitalists do, but we can be out on the streets. Obviously, we have our YouTube channels and we have our social media, and that's super important. But actually being able to meet anarchist communists, have a conversation with them, pick up literature, and know that they'll be there again next week and the week after that as well, on an ongoing basis. And I think that's something that is super important, and it's something that I think we tend to be a little bit weak on. I mean, we've got an excuse here in Glasgow because of the dreadful weather for, 11 months of the year. On a serious note, I think it is something that we have to do. We have to be out there. People have to be visible, and we have to be approachable. And we have to do everything that suggests that we are not a sect, because actually we're not a sect and we don't act in a sect-like way. Okay, we've got a strange name on the surface of anarchist communists, libertarian communists, or whatever. It doesn't really matter, I suppose, what term you use. It's always, for some people, it's going to be like, oh, what's that? Or it's a contradiction, or it's just a bit scary and stuff. Once people kind of get to know you in any circumstance and realise that you are sensible, you have something serious to say, then I think, when things do become more energetic in terms of, what the working class are doing, then we've got an audience.
Thanks, Dick. So Deb's managed to put something in the chat, which I'll just read out just in case anyone can't see it, because I know on some platforms or hardware, it's a bit hard to read the chat. So she's just put, names in general, I just tell people I'm a socialist because anarchism and communism are misunderstood. I know my teenagers have come home from school, specifically been taught that communism is a bad thing. It seems to be a national message in schools now. And I explained to my kids that this is state capitalism, but still all kids are hearing this propaganda. Capitalists are strengthening their hands everywhere. Go for anyone else want to sort of take that point up?
I had some great conversations on Saturday in Devon. I attended a Palestine march in a small fishing town. And I got a chat into a few people, one of whom was actually, last couple of years, few years, has been a Labour parliamentary candidate. And we actually had a great debate about the merits of voting and not voting. So I'm experiencing quite a lot of reaction from people when I say I'm never going to vote again. As I had this conversation on Saturday, as I said, somebody I really like and respect, who's very left in the god-awful Starmer party. And of course, I had a conversation with her about why the hell are you in this party, you know? And then she said to me, "So, are you going to vote?" And I said, "No." And it was a really interesting conversation. I find actually, because I've also been an activist for the last 5 years with Extinction Rebellion, and I found with people I have great respect in the movement that if I say I'm not going to vote for a broken system, a broken capitalist system, people get very kind of uptight about it. So I just wondered what your collective thoughts were tonight about talking about not voting. In fact, I don't know what people's views are tonight about should people vote or not vote. That's my take on it.
Thanks, Michael. Should we throw it open to the floor, first of all? Anyone want to sort of bring that up, discuss it?
I won't be voting, you know. I mean, there are no real choices there. You know, there's just choices between capitalist party number one and capitalist party number two. In my area, you know, it's Tower Hamlets. It's always been Labour, and that's not going to change whether I vote or not. Is immaterial. I'm not going to make a fetish out of not voting, even though I don't vote. You know, I think the main thing is organising at the grassroots level. I know a lot of people are a bit appalled, but you know, as Michael said about, oh, you're not going to vote. They're horrified by that, but you know. Mm. But what for? I think, you know, probably Labour will get back in at the next election. But I think considerable numbers are actually increasingly disillusioned about the parliamentary system. And I think this disillusion is spreading to other facets of British society as well, you know, increasing disillusion with the monarchy, increasing awareness that there's a very small elite that are making huge profits, that sort of thing. And those are the sort of things we need to rely on. Whether you vote or not doesn't really matter. I'd rather not, because I think, you know, if you say you're going to vote, then you're giving your power to someone else. You put a bit of paper in a ballot box, and then those people are in power for around 5 years. And anyway, you know, they're not what really decides what happens in society on many levels, because there's a ruling class that decides, you know, what it's going to do, you know, whether it's going to lay off thousands more people or stuff like that.
That, I mean, exactly. I mean, I've believed that concept for about the last 50 years, man. It's like, you know, like Tony Benn was saying years ago, you know, you can't get democracy through parliament. I mean, clearly, you know, but I find if I talk to people about the ruling class and the establishment and all this stuff, people look very nonplussed. That they say, well, what do you mean the ruling class? Who are they, you know? But it's very clear to me after... well, I guess decades of believing in anti-capitalism, that actually I question the whole thing about what is democracy. And clearly, all these years later, I've come back now to kind of more kind of anarchist type thinking about, well, actually, the system can't be reformed. We have to start with a new system, you know. So, yeah, for me personally, the whole thing about voting and not voting is an interesting one, because as I say, I mean, I'm very clear in my own head about where I am with it all, but trying to converse with people, because I think for a lot of people, certainly I know lots of people are so angry about the Tories. They want to get them out, you know. In fact, locally, where I live in South Devon, quite near Chris, you know, there's actually groups now forming primary groups, you know, like in Totnes, you've got George Monbiot leading this, you know, primary kind of movement. So basically, they have lots of meetings and talks about selecting the most appropriate candidate to oust the local Tory. And I'm just despair of that. I just think this is just tinkering with tactical vote. It's tactical voting, you know. And if I say I don't think this is a good idea, people get really wound up, you know. Have you heard that there's so primary stuff? Have you got the same in London? There's just stuff happening up your way like that. I mean, down here it's led by George Monbiot.
I'm not really sure. I think Galloway will probably try to do something, or one of his. The workers' party.
I just want to emphasize that the whole point is that people have to be involved in mass activity, grassroots activity. No matter, it's not a question of whether what you call it, it's not a question of whether it's anarchist communism or this or that or anti-capitalism or whatever. What is important is what is needed to be done. And if you're going to have a revolution, people need to begin to start self-organizing. They begin to have, as I said in my presentation, they need to have the confidence, they need to have the skills, they need to have the will, they need to be developing alternative institutions and ways of thinking, alternative cultures, so that when things crystallize, when mass movements begin to galvanize to a much larger extent, that people will be ready. So to do that, then whatever you call it, it means being involved in grassroots activity, which is why the whole issue of elections and democracy, et cetera, I mean, if you have a big enough mass movement, then it doesn't really matter necessarily who's in power. People will, they'll have to respond to it. So our job is to be involved in work. Working in grassroots movements to strengthen the self-activity and self-confidence of the working class. That's what our job is as anarchist communism. That's the spirit of anarchist communism, where we're trying to create a new society. That's what people need to be doing. Anything else is frankly irrelevant. And I think that's some of the problems with the environmental movement is people are very involved in the environmental movement, but they're not necessarily making links to other areas of struggle. And the whole idea is anarchist communism is all these struggles need to come together to create the revolution. And often the environmentalists don't make many links with other working class struggles or with other issues. And in fact, Extinction Rebellion, I find incredibly reformist. They call on the government to declare a climate emergency. They call on the government to doing this. They call on the government to be doing that. And even if some of these environmental groups do something like direct action, ultimately they're still calling on the government to take some action rather than actually linking up and being part of a general working class movement for a general revolution. And that's what I think a lot of environmentalists are, in fact, misinformed, because I think they actually do think capitalism can be reformed, that there can be just transitions within capitalism. I don't think they're revolutionary enough, but I think it's only whatever you call an anarchist communist vision that can see the whole picture.
Bonnie sort of gave an example of social insertion in sort of the environmental movement. I don't know if anyone else from the ACG wanted to give an example of social insertion, so that's explain it perhaps to anyone outside the ACG, this especificismo, exactly what it means.
That wasn't what I was going to talk about. I was going to say about how atomizing voting is. I remember in 97, I went down with the intention to vote Labour because I'd only ever known Tories in my life, in my sort of adult lifetime, in my childhood, really. And I just thought, I'm just going down, I'm going to vote Labour, I'm going to hold my nose, I'm going to vote Labour. The Labour candidate was outside the voting booth or whatever, the voting poll. And I just thought, nah, I really can't do it. So I went and voted Socialist Labour Party, Socialist Labour Party, the Arthur Scargill group at the time. But the reality is, it doesn't make a difference if I'd gone in and voted Labour, because that, you know, it wouldn't have made any difference. Obviously, there wasn't a victory for the Socialist Labour Party in that constituency, but it wouldn't have mattered if there had been, because capitalism trundles on, and it can co-opt, and where it can't co-opt, it can marginalise things that are based upon voting and that kind of thing, whereas it cannot marginalise so easy mass movements. If people want to go and vote for some left-wing group, fine. I mean, if it makes people feel a little bit better, but the struggle is not in the voting world. It's not in the voting booth. It's not in Parliament. You know, that's actually something that was, you know, created by capitalism. It isn't a tool by which capitalism could be destroyed. In terms of social insertion, what it kind of means is being involved in a coordinated, conscious, systematic way in social struggles. So that would be struggles in workplaces, struggles in communities, so struggles around any aspect of struggle in daily life. And what you need for social insertion is a revolutionary organization. So the idea is that you systematically work with a agreed kind of democratically agreed projects and democratically agreed perspectives to revolutionize their movements as much as possible, to push for self-organization, to push for anarchist communist politics, but to do it in a way that, you know, you're doing it in a structured way, in a coordinated way, not like one group here is doing one thing, another group here is doing something else, you know, a third group is doing something different again, but everybody's kind of working together to a common plan. You know, that's democratically, it's not imposed upon you know, people, it's democratically arrived at, but you systematically do that. And that's kind of the difference, I suppose, in some ways between, say, the ACG and some other anarchist type groups or whatever. They don't really have that perspective at all. They just kind of respond to whatever is the latest kind of thing. You know, we need to be in there for the long term, because, you know, change doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen over several nights. It can take a long time, but you've got to be doing things systematically. I know I've used that word about 25 times, but you've got to be doing things in a way that is consistent. It's got to be something that people can say, well, they're consistently doing that. They're not doing what I call the Lenin quick step, where, you know, all the emphasis on one thing with a Leninist type party, and then someone upstairs in the Central Committee decides, oh, we're not doing that anymore, we're doing something else. And it's totally an example of how undemocratic those organisations are, tend to be. You stick at things, basically. Sticking at things is super, super important. And if you're not getting anywhere and you're not making progress, well, yeah, at that point you would reconsider what's happening. But I think that's social insertion. It's about actually consistently being involved in things in a coherent anarchist communist way.
I did want to say how inspiring I found this, and how helpful for people here who don't know me. I am the coordinator of 26 feminist organisations in London that work together. They wouldn't describe themselves as anarchist communists. They'd probably describe themselves as revolutionary feminists, but there's a lot of parallels with anarchist communism. It's immensely difficult to organise. I completely agree, and this is something that we often talk about at work. How are we going to get the time to organise? Because the forces against us are incredibly good at distracting us with what they want us to attend to rather than what we want to attend to. And I think the points that Dec was just making about being consistent, sticking with it, keeping going, that is part of the struggle that we are managing all the time. But it's really great to come here and listen to these examples and these ideas, and refresh these ideas for myself, because that gives me the strength, if you like, the resilience to go back in And in fact, we have got a meeting set up for Wednesday to discuss something that's coming up. And this is really timely because I was thinking, oh, yeah, that's what we should be doing, getting some mass organisation going. That's a really, if you like, critical part of something for us to do at the moment. The other thing is that we have achieved really a very big change in London, and that has been through direct action and sticking with it. And although I accept this is within the communist, the capitalist model, nonetheless, we have achieved a change through our action. And that is within London, like the rest of the country, there are victim support services, and in London, support for domestic abuse survivors has always been an integral part of the bigger victim support service. And survivors of domestic abuse have been very, very badly served by that service. And through a campaign which has taken place over about 4 years, we've managed to get that aspect of the victim support service separated from the main service and commissioned separately. And I accept it's still in the capitalist system, but that will really make a difference for women and girls in London. While it's not revolutionary yet, I think it's a step on the way, and the women that have been involved in that feel a great sense of achievement, and it's motivates them to continue with a very difficult struggle.
Yeah, thanks, Shani. I think that's really key, that we make changes in that, and then takes us inspires us to take next action and learn from that and take it forward into more direct action. So
I haven't heard of Reclaim the Power, but there's a group up here that might be national called This Is Rigged. And I think they might be people that were involved in environmental stuff before, but have become disillusioned with its organisational forms and stuff. And they do seem to be making links between food poverty and oil and stuff like that. So I don't know that much about them. They seem to be kind of organizing in non-hierarchical ways and things like that, but whether they're actually developing a full-blown kind of anti-capitalist perspective, well, you know, maybe they will, and I think they might do. I think a lot of groups are increasingly just sort of realize that you know, the system itself is the problem. Reformism is still a thing, and capitalism isn't going to reform itself in any kind of way that's going to save the planet. It just can't. You know, capitalism could, it probably would, because people don't want to die, but it can't. It's got to keep making profits. Its expansion is built into the system. But yeah, This Is Rigged, they're called anyway.
So my experience is that there's a lot of anarchists organising in the direct action scene. So like Earth First, there was Climate Camps, and then there's this Reclaim the Power. They're focusing on the eco actions, but nonetheless, the way they organise is anarchist. And I think it's really important to make those links, actually, between, like, if you're talking about social insertion, like making links between anarchist revolutionary groups and then those actual groups of people that are doing anarchy in practice through their decision making, their organizing, their analysis. Because these, at my understanding, I mean, this doesn't happen with all the groups, but I'm really impressed with Reclaim the Power, their approach to make joining the dots. So their focus at the moment is on Drax, which is the power station in Yorkshire, and they really make the links between racism, colonialism, the workers' rights, and the need to challenge that power station because of the climate impact. So if there's something to take away from today, I would say just it's making links with all of these activists, this action that is happening all throughout the country, but somehow just not making the links.
I'm involved in stuff around land justice, and I found that before I'd been involved in housing, anti-gentrification, and I started getting interested in land because I realized that land was something that linked all sorts of different things together. So, for example, land affects the food we grow. It affects the environment, how land is used in terms of the environment, resources, food, housing, every issue. So many issues are linked to the idea of land and who owns it, who controls it, and who has access to it. I feel that being involved in stuff around land justice is a way of making links between housing people, food people, environment people, community people. It's bringing them all together. So I'm involved in something called People's Land Policy, and we're actually organising a London Land Justice Fair in July in a community-run park. And so the whole idea of that is to bring, we're having all different grassroots groups are going to have stalls. And it's the idea is to bring all these people who are all doing really interesting work to be in one place together and have workshops where they can exchange ideas. And to me, that is the work of an anarchist communist. It's the idea of trying to bring grassroots groups together and to see how it's, you know, it's not just rent, it's not just housing, it's not just getting a place to grow your food. You know, all these struggles are linked to the big struggle. And by bringing people together, we're hoping it's going to galvanize the bigger land justice move. It makes those links. So that's one thing. And I don't make a big deal of being an anarchist communist, or do I deny being an anarchist communist? You know, it's not relevant, but it's by being involved in these things that you're furthering the cause of anarchist communism and getting people to think about the bigger picture.